And in my studies, we actually saw the opposite, where our pens that had enrichment were eating more. So we knew that there was something going on there. The lasers were getting them up and moving. They were more active, but they were also going to the feeder more. But then we also saw in a couple of cases improved feed conversion as well. So we were kind of in that space of improving, getting them up, getting them eating more, but not kind of passing a line where it was hurting their body weight, or where they were burning, you know, too many calories or something like that. And that was, we thought, kind of because of this was a limited time periods per day, kind of just sprinkled out every 6 hours so that the birds weren't getting too used to it, but also just kind of to that point to make sure that they weren't, you know, being exercising too much or being forced to exercise too much in any case.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. The Poultry Science Association is dedicated to advancing poultry science worldwide. Learn more at poultryscience.org. Anatox, partnering with the world's food producers to develop and deliver innovative programs to efficiently produce safer food. Kemin invites you to optimize poultry health and nutrition. Dive in at kemin.com/poultry. Fortiva, creating ingredients for impact to support animal resilience and health. Learn more at FortivaImpact.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Poultry Nutrition Black Belt Podcast, where we discuss the latest in poultry nutrition research and industry trends in approximately 10 minutes. My name is Sam Rochel. I'm an associate professor of poultry nutrition here at Auburn University, and joined today by Dr. Megan Meyer, who is an assistant professor at Oklahoma State University in the Animal Science Department. And there she is studying and teaching animal behavior and welfare, and specifically focusing on poultry, and has done research with broilers and kind of broiler dynamics and enrichment and overall welfare. So really look forward to talking with you, Megan, and learning more about what you've been up to.
Yeah, thank you so much. Happy to be here.
So we'll jump right into it. You know, this is really interesting question to kind of start it off. Earlier we were talking about this, but you know, when we talk about broilers specifically on welfare, at least to the untrained eye from a welfare perspective, when you walk into a house, you see a lot of birds that are sedentary, maybe they're feeding or drinking, but otherwise often not expressing a lot of variation in their behavior. So, you know, with that, do modern broilers have a social hierarchy, and you know, how does that affect their behavior and overall flock dynamics?
Yeah, so I think we know, you know, with any kind of social group of animals, there's some sort of hierarchy, there's some dynamic there, some more, we usually think of them as dominant and then more submissive or more subordinate type of animals. And we certainly know that with birds. And of course, birds are original kind of pecking order. So they sort of historically documented to have a pretty linear hierarchy and a pretty well-structured hierarchy. But we know that super well documented and studied in laying hens. And then of course, kind of less so in our broilers. So yes, but my kind of current research area or interest is in, there is still social behavior and there are still dynamics there. We just are thinking in the context, as we know, our kind of fast growing conventional broilers, where they're with tens of thousands of birds in a house, perhaps. Of course, they don't have a linear hierarchy with every bird in the house, but we know that there are still some dynamics kind of either within smaller groups of broilers or just when the time comes. So around the feeder or around enrichments or things like that, for example. So certainly is a social hierarchy there. My kind of interest right now is kind of figuring out, how much does it matter to the broiler in terms of their welfare? And especially as we kind of know these birds are going to access the feeders and the water lines, and we have requirements for spacing and number of feeders and things like that for broilers. But my kind of interest in my background in environmental enrichment has led more to the question of, so if we are introducing something into the house that is going to be by nature more limited, but still really ideally attractive and useful to these birds, when does that dynamic come into play with these? And are all the birds in the house going to benefit the same if there is a social dynamic here that we haven't really described very well?
Yeah, so that makes sense and brings us kind of into the next topic, which is environmental enrichment and how this impacts that dynamic. And so when we talk about broilers and environmental enrichment, what do we see? And obviously, that's going to impact the type of enrichment that we introduce as well.
Yeah, yeah. And with broilers, there's been a great deal of work and in broiler breeders as well. But enrichment's kind of focused on, and of course, with all enrichment, our goal is for it to be relevant to the birds, biologically speaking. So something that's going to kind of meet some hopefully natural or innate behavioral need for the bird, something that the environment may be lacking in, versus just kind of, you know, throwing something into the environment just because it's different or it looks good to a person. We're really thinking about what matters to these birds and what will broilers actually use. So what we've kind of seen is they're not, over time, they're not going to be, you know, they're not active the way laying hens are, particularly as they near market weight. We see less use of things like perches at specific heights. But what we've kind of seen over time is broilers, they like elevated platforms. They do like the opportunity to get up off the litter. Plenty of kind of, you know, fun research in the area of things that they can destruct or kind of work with, like straw bales or even maybe something that's kind of getting into those preening or grooming type behaviors. So some dust bath opportunities, anything like that. We see that broilers do like them and will use them. But then kind of the ultimate question, of course, is what can we incorporate into a commercial environment that makes sense for the growers, for the producers as well. And then kind of my interest now being into that, even if we know something works, you know, in a research setting, when we do have this scale of 25, 30, 40,000 birds, how many birds are actually getting to interact with something? And is it the same birds kind of over that, you know, 6 or 7 week cycle? And how does that work? But, and then in my graduate school research, we were focused on visual or sensory enrichment. So we used the laser devices, and kind of one of the key benefits was those devices projecting moving lasers onto the floor of a house. And the benefit there was kind of, there's not really room for competition or any sort of aggression or certain birds getting to kind of hog the enrichment in that case, because it was kind of fair game throughout the house to all broilers. So that was one kind of area that I started thinking about in grad school on that research, but now just kind of thinking more into any kind of enrichment, particularly these more kind of physical functional types that are going to be limited just by design. How do we figure out how many we need per house, or how many per, you know, how many broilers per enrichment to make them actually effective for all kind of across the social hierarchy of birds?
And so when we talk about feed intake specifically, you know, feed intake is the key driver for broiler growth. So when you introduce enrichment, whether it's the physical or sensory, like you've worked with Megan, I mean, what does that ultimately impact regarding their feed intake? And are they spending more time engaging with the enrichment versus feeding? Obviously, as a nutritionist, I think about how they're expending the calories interacting with this enrichment as well. So how does that ultimately impact their feeding behavior and overall performance?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. And that so it can vary a little bit by enrichment. In my specific experience, that was always a question that came up, because our enrichment was aimed at getting the birds to be a little bit more active. So kind of that idea of, you know, we know birds are going to get heavier, less active. We'll see leg lameness issues as they get closer to market weight. So kind of the big picture with my research at Iowa State with Dr. Bobek with the lasers was getting them to be a little bit more active. And that was a question that always came up, is if this does work, are we going to hurt, you know, growth performance or see less gains or worse feed conversion? And in my studies, we actually saw the opposite, where our pens that had enrichment were eating more. So we knew that there was something going on there. The lasers were getting them up and moving. They were more active, but they were also going to the feeder more. But then we also saw in a couple of cases improved feed conversion as well. So we were kind of in that space of improving, getting them up, getting them eating more, but not kind of passing a line where it was hurting their body weight or where they were burning, you know, too many calories or something like that. And that was, we thought, kind of because of this was a limited time periods per day, kind of just sprinkled out every 6 hours so that the birds weren't getting too used to it, but also just kind of to that point to make sure that they weren't, you know, being exercising too much or being forced to exercise too much in any case. But yeah, that was kind of one part of it. And then in terms of feeding behavior, what I think is interesting is we know broilers very highly motivated to feed. So kind of that classic picture, the broiler is over time not doing too much besides getting their trips to the feed in the water and otherwise spending over 80% of their time kind of inactive or laying down as they near market weight. And we know that has some correlations with welfare issues like lameness or dermatitis and issues like that for the birds. But what we've seen in some research, not my research, but kind of looking at feeder space or number of feeders, is there's some evidence that we know all these birds aren't eating at the same time, or we know this also by common sense. So certainly our kind of feed space allotments are allowing for all the broilers to be able to eat throughout the day, but they're doing it at different times. And what's been shown is that there's some sort of relationship between kind of just pure number of birds that will go to feeders at the same time. And there's something there. That's what I'm really interested in now, is kind of that, even the thing that they're most motivated to do, there's birds that aren't going to be able to do it, you know, any time of day. They're going to defer to possibly these more aggressive or more dominant, perhaps just more heavier birds. So that's kind of where our research question is starting to move as well, as, you know, are there certain birds that get priority access to resources, which would certainly be very well documented in laying hens and in other species? And does that apply to feed, water, enrichment, and kind of how does that all work?
Kemen calls all poultry experts. You already know the key to a profitable operation is healthy, productive birds. Our team of poultry experts are driven by curiosity to develop science-backed ingredients and solutions that help you maintain feed and water quality, improve intestinal health, optimize nutrition, and eliminate pathogens. Learn more today by diving in at kemen.com/poultry to learn more.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And we talk a lot about body weight uniformity in breeding flocks, but as birds get bigger and they're consuming more feed, we don't think that about that as much as in broilers, but clearly uniformity and how that could impact is certainly pretty interesting. So really awesome to think about that. So let's switch gears a little bit, because you spend most of your time, your primary appointment is in teaching, and I appreciate what you're doing, Megan, because you've got a big department there and you see you've got kind of a good audience to introduce poultry. Oklahoma is probably not as poultry heavy state as some of the other animal science and poultry science departments we see. So it's a good opportunity to give students who don't have that background. And so you've got a really hands-on way of teaching. You know, you kind of talk through a feeding trial that they do and some behavioral observation. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, how you're approaching that class and how you've seen that experience, impact your students?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, 100% right. My class is pretty small in terms of kind of the species elective classes we have here. So one poultry science course that I teach, and it's kind of centered around a broiler grow out trial. So that's kind of, I think, one of the greatest things about that class in broilers is they can raise them from obviously hatch to finish within the semester easily. So we get to do that with a pretty small group of students. But yeah, the way I've kind of structured it is it's set up like a mini research trial. So not only am I sneaking in, kind of getting them exposed to what does it look like to conduct research with animals in case, and my students are mostly seniors and many of them haven't been involved in research. So that kind of background. But yeah, we use broilers, and for them specifically, my kind of treatment setup in the mini trial is environmental enrichment. So they do every week, in terms of they weigh birds, feed birds, weigh feeders, those sorts of things, but they also observe behavior. And we just do a live, kind of what we'd call a live continuous sampling. So they watch everything a bird does for a 10-minute period. And then over time, at the end, they'll get to look at kind of their performance. So how did their pen compare in terms of body weight, feed intake, FCR, which they calculate, which is, I'm sure, their least favorite part of the class, is figuring out that math and doing that and presenting that. But then also I ask them to just, you know, think about the behaviors, and just obviously it's a tiny study, but just kind of what differences do we see in the groups where there was enrichment versus the groups that didn't have enrichment. And we typically use just a sand bath or a little elevated platform in the pen. But yeah, I kind of ask them to think through both those things and just get them exposed. But yeah, the feed mixing is one of their first labs. And it's, I think it's really important for them to see if they, you know, they may not have gotten in that in depth with a species before. And I think, you know, kind of my welfare angle is always imparting to them, you are mixing these diets and this is what your baby chicks are going to be eating next week. So just how important it is, you know, to do your math correctly and kind of learn these ingredients and recognize what we've talked about in class that's going into the diet. But I've been surprised sometimes they can be pretty high stress about that once you kind of tell them, like, this is a real diet. This is not just for fun. You are going to feed your baby chicks this. So I think that's pretty important for them, is double checking their math and understanding they can do it. And, you know, just obviously using the scales and those kind of basic skills. But yeah, them getting to see the ingredients and see it kind of applied, I think, is a really important part of the class as well.
And yes, you know, someone coming from a poultry science department, I really appreciate you exposing the students in an animal science department. And I think it's awesome and ultimately going to end up, you know, getting more students into the industry. And so, you know, I know the industry really appreciates what you're doing there to help train the next generation of students. So really appreciate your efforts there.
Yeah, it's been, I kind of survey them at the beginning of the semester, and I've had a couple, just my first couple times teaching, that came in definitely with no poultry interest that are now working in the industry, particularly with Cal Maine. So they've gotten a couple converted to the poultry industry for sure. And I'll keep trying on that.
Yeah. And I mean, we'll take every poultry interested student that we can get.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you again. I've learned a lot. It's really interesting to think about these behavior dynamics in broilers, which probably are a bit overlooked in the welfare scenario, and how that ultimately relates in a practical way to feeding dynamics and overall performance. So really appreciate what you're doing, and we've learned a lot.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been great.
Absolutely. And so thanks to all the listeners for joining. If you enjoy this episode and want to catch similar episodes, then please like and subscribe and follow on your favorite platform, and we'll catch you on the next one.